You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Justified After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Justified After Show.
Yeah. There it is. That's it. Okay. Nice. All right. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Justified Season 5, Episode 1, the premiere episode this year, eponymously titled Murder of Crows. I'm your host, John Comerford. I'm joined in the studio by the lovely and talented Tamara Bird.
Hey, everybody.
And the not-so-lovely but equally talented Stephen Mottomley.
That's me.
And the incorrigible, the inimitable, the indefatigable.
Indefatigable.
That's the one I was looking for. Matt Lieberman.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I love this show.
And, of course, in the booth, Stephen Lemieux. Thank you, Stephen.
Woo!
All right, so real quick, I want to let you know that we have our special segment today. Instead of news and gossip, we're going to be talking about the premiere that we were at. We were all invited to join FX Studios and the makers of Justified for their premiere at the DGA, the Directors Guild of America here in L.A. Unfortunately, only Tamara and I were able to go, but we will talk about that. So we're going to do that after we break down the show. So getting to the show, welcome to have it back. Was that well received by you guys?
It's been a long time. And
I know.
We're glad to see the high body count back.
Over just a year, almost a year, because the last season premiered January 8th. This premiered January 7th. So we've been
a lot longer than that. But I agree. They made up for lost time. The squib hits and the the stage blood is back.
Yeah. I know.
Good comedy, high body count.
Uh-huh. Just like we like it.
I think there might have been more bodies in this one episode than there were in the vast majority of season 4.
It could be. I mean, what was it?
Nine.
Was it 10?
Nine.
Oh, okay, I had
9.
10. So, all right, we'll go with 9.
Dang.
9.5, just in case.
Okay.
Anybody who's
averaging. We'll call season 4 the smart season.
Everyone likes a good mystery.
Yeah.
I dug season 4.
Yeah.
True.
But I like squib hits.
Okay.
That's true. Season 4 did bring us Constable Bob.
It did. Oh, absolutely.
So.
I
right.
miss him.
But so, got off on a great footing because let's just open up in the courtroom. It's great to see Dewey back. It's always fun to have Dewey right in the middle of everything.
And can we just say how different he looks in real life?
Oh, yeah, all right, go ahead. We saw him at the press line.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, all the tattoos are makeup, and you know, does he just look like a normal guy?
He was very presentable.
Wearing a suit and had combed hair and all that.
I almost didn't recognize him.
Yeah, almost not. Yeah. Almost not. I think we have a picture, but we'll show those later.
Okay, so getting into it now, this was great because we are setting up, or at least the show is setting up, the Detroit and Florida aspect of it. And Graham Yost had actually talked about this. He was really anxious to do Detroit and Florida because those were Elmore Leonard's, one of the favorite places for him to write about. So he was great to be able to do that for him. Unfortunately, he passed away before he could see the episode, but they were very excited about the idea. And I thought it was great, too, because we've been talking about Detroit for the last season.
We've been talking about it for the last 4 seasons.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been part of it, but certainly last season was a lot of the show.
Focus.
Was all that toning and the whole thing. And we finally get to go there. And then Florida, we started the whole series. The whole thing was started in Florida. First scene was in Florida. So
yeah,
now we get to go back.
Out of Florida to stay
exactly.
Alive,
you got you. So it's good to go back in a way. So that's great. And so we have these two worlds colliding. And we also see that in there's Cuba, there's Canada. I mean, we got a lot of things going on in here.
It's multinational,
that's
justified.
Right.
I had a real feel of True Grit in that courtroom scene he's just a marshal.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't really taking too much of it that seriously.
No.
Enough to not get in trouble, but it really had that feel. And real quick, the little memorial they did to
Elmore Leonard. Yeah.
Oh,
we
right.
It was, just, that, sure.
It was really nice. I really felt like, man, I think not only obviously was a voice lost, but a whole style of writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
which
huge,
has been copied like crazy.
Of course.
Yeah, but
tribute.
When you lose the
original.
It's just it's going to be a void. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to the writing in the series without his, you know, I don't know how involved he was near the end. But definitely, there, you could see his thumbprint was on it. So, we'll keep an eye on that. But anyway, that was a nice tribute.
Absolutely. I'm glad that we're getting this kind of larger scope this year. It boasts of, okay, we're in season five. How many more years can we be doing this show? We need to not only expand the playing field, but it's time to kind of reap some of these crops we've been planting over the last few years. And, you know, Dewey, he's a very funny character. He's a fan favorite character. To plug him right into the action and to put him up against or pair him with, you know, these far more dangerous cousins who actually do all the things that he pretends to do.
Right.
You know?
Even he's afraid of them.
Exactly. Yeah. He's terrified of being a gangster, but that's all he's cut out for. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a great generator for conflict, especially, like, this episode had tons of twists. Like, you never really knew where it was going, and I feel like, you know, is he the next Dilly? Is he the next body that's going to be piled up in a long line of Crow dead?
Well, and, you know, with his $300 that he got, you know, it'll be interesting because he could become a target or he could become a kingpin. Right.
But as Matt was pointing out before we even started, did he already give all that $300,000 that he was awarded to Boyd buy Audrey's?
Right.
Yeah.
According to Boyd, he did.
Well, you know, he's throwing that number about. I mean, he was going to give it to Paxton. You know, Boyd was going to give that $300,000 to Paxton to help Ava.
Mm-hmm. Assuming Paxton was going to.
But he says, you know, I don't have it now. So was that just all a ruse?
I don't know. I mean, Raylan susses out that it was Boyd's idea for him to purchase Audrey's.
Right.
We don't know how much money necessarily he spent on it, but Boyd gave up what I assume is the majority of his money in this briefcase to the Canadians. Yeah. I can't imagine that he actually has $300,000 lying around, and it's, you know, it's the exact same figure.
Yeah, except I even have a hard time believing that Dewey is dumb enough to pay $300,000 for Audrey's.
Right.
But I'm not saying he couldn't, but it's a chance. That's a stretch for me.
Well,
to buy that.
Then how about this? If it was going to take him another week to get the $300,000, maybe he was just going to go back and just kill Dewey and take the rest of his money.
Right.
Well, that's more likely, I guess.
You know, but he did save enough for that above ground pool.
Fancy pool. Very fancy.
All right. Let's talk about the pool. I just thought it was hysterical. No, but not that
John
part of it.
Because
it's your favorite scene.
No. The part that I think was hysterical was that he's playing Marco Polo in an above ground pool.
Thank you.
And then there's a school bus driving by.
Oh, that's
right in full.
Naked. You left the naked.
Well, yes, of course, naked. But I just love that the school bus is driving on the same route as a whorehouse where they're having above ground naked Marco Polo.
Yeah. Well, you know, what else do you do in an above ground pool?
I know.
Naked Marco Polo.
Okay. But let's step back a minute because we have to enjoy Wade.
James LeGrosse.
Yeah. Fabulous actor.
Yes.
And just his.
It's one of the great lines of the show today.
Yeah.
Because what else would you say to somebody walking in?
Hey there, Raylan. Can I get you a blowjob?
Blowjob or something?
Something?
Just such a weird delivery, which was just so rad. Yeah. And then after that, he's like, so what's new? Oh, I got out of prison. Really?
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. That's nuts. I'm looking right at you.
Not in prison.
God. What? Wow. No. And Dickie Bennett is name checked.
Was he? I missed that part. Where was he?
Wade. When he was talking to Wade, he said he mentioned Dickie Bennett and that whole scandal. Wade used to work with Dickie, which is why Raylan's kind of a little uneasy
and aware that he got out because he says anybody who's tried to kill a marshal gets notified.
That's a good policy.
It is a good policy. Yeah. But I just love James. Well, first of all, I mean, we're in a bar and he's carrying the case of beer or whatever he is.
Or condoms.
Whatever he's carrying. But
it's a heavy box of condoms. Jesus.
It's Kentucky.
It seemed like such a natural thing to say. Can I get you a blowjob or something?
It
completely unaware of the whole thing. I go, how do you? Okay.
Man's just being hospitable.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah,
difficult. I mean, because he. I mean, I would be chuckling like crazy. I'm thinking that might bleed somewhere. I might give a tell because that's such an easy thing to laugh about.
Mm-hmm. But they do that. They do that a lot with the writing in this, and it's to lull you into this. Oh, they're just a bunch of yokels. They don't really have. Yeah. Oh my God! And they
not an awareness.
And they get you every time with it.
Yeah.
They did it in the courtroom scene with the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wants to do this grand case and. Mm-hmm. The Judge cuts her out from underneath. They do it later on the bridge. They do it in Detroit.
Of course.
So, and they're so good at it. Yeah. They're so good at just layering it in and just being in that world. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing.
Okay, let's actually talk story a little bit more, because, Matt, you brought up a great point that in the courtroom sequence, do you think the attorney really wanted to bring a class action or could bring a class action suit against all the brutality?
Marshals?
Well, that Raylan is responsible for.
Especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's left open-ended. Right. But you have to imagine with the amount of times that he's been written up or even the things that didn't get reported, mm-hmm. where he's just playing fast and loose with the law with very little regard for it. The things that he did when he wasn't even on duty, you know, that wound up like in arrests.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there was that whole thing about him saying, that's not in the report. I didn't write that in the report. So obviously, you know, Dewey told him. But I because of that point that you're bringing up, I'm wondering if they're actually going to go somewhere with that. And that might be part of his challenges that he has to overcome this season.
Well, I mean, if you recall back at the start of the series, there's an investigation being done into his conduct.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, now that we're in the back half of the series, we could conceivably be seeing that as part of the show's end game. Mm-hmm. In the next couple of seasons, these things do come back to haunt him.
Mm-hmm. They don't put that stuff in there for no reason.
Yeah.
So when he said, I didn't put that in the report, that red flagged me too. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine they would drop that line in there and not have some sort of payoff. So they're laying something in, I think. Could be totally wrong.
All right. Well, speaking of laying something in, that whole courtroom sequence with Dewey being awarded and everything like that, and then, of course, with Dilly being on the run, that's what sets up Raylan for having to go to Florida, because Art tells him, you got to go. Mm-hmm. Take care. And since he gets nowhere with Dewey, he's got to go.
Kid.
But I also wanted to talk about the parallels between how they set that storyline up with how they set Boyd up, because they frequently have done that, where they take these two characters and show, you know, take them on parallel storyline, so to speak. And that's what they do with Boyd, because we're in a courtroom with Raylan. Now we're with an attorney in the jail, well, the holding cell, so to speak, with Ava. And that sets
and
him
the
up.
Wild man.
And the wild man, yes.
Yeah. I never settle. That's why they call me the wild man. Okay. Let's back it up.
Dial it back a little bit, wild man. Put your headphones on.
Crank it to 10.
Totally quiets the wild man. And then what does he listen to? Classical.
Opera.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's wild.
Wild.
No, they do that a lot. Mm-hmm. Again, the parallel, they've done it since the first season. Yeah. Since, you know, there's always been. They took a little departure when they went into the episodic out of, you know. But I think we can all just lower our heads for a moment and thank Breaking Bad
for
this sort of long term, lots of violence, lots of breaking the rules, sort of, because really, I mean, they set the groundwork, and these shows are reaping the benefits. Because if you remember the first season of this, they kind of went and then they went to the episodic, we're going to solve a crime, and then they shifted. And they saw I don't know if they saw it, Breaking Bad, but Breaking Bad was moving in that direction, and they started moving that direction. It's made the show completely different.
So you think this is Beach Boys and the Beatles seeing what she there is doing and you know, responding?
Yeah.
Well,
and that means what show is the Monkees? Because they were all right there for a little while.
Low Winter Sun is the Monkees.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
That show.
So that's going to be one episode show we're going to do is all right. Shows based on groups of the 60s.
Great. Right, so we get our first glimpse of Florida. We see, you know, I loved how they did it cinematically. The way they showed Florida was always out. There was green. There was the water and everything. And when we go to Detroit, it's
gritty
dark,
graphic novel shots,
You know, just the first elevator shot you see.
Yeah, that bucket being lowered down the shaft.
But in both places, everyone smells bad. You could just tell. Everybody's sweaty and gross and
I'm sorry. No, here's what I loved about Detroit. Every time you saw the Kingpin, he was by the pool. He was,
Adam Arkin.
Yes. Yeah. So
Theotonin.
When they're going to Detroit, I'm thinking,
we're
going to
see the nice.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big difference.
Bucket. And here's the other thing.
Well, that's the difference between Theo and Sammy.
And Sammy, exactly.
Yeah. And yet they're saying, don't you guys know about, you know, the NSA and the drones and stuff? And they're kind of doing the same thing that Kentucky's doing. They're so under the radar and staying so invisible. This is their technology.
Right. Yeah.
I loved it.
Buckets and chainsaws.
Buckets and chainsaws.
Let's see them eavesdrop on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a chainsaw is pretty loud.
That's true.
12 stories okay. up, that'll carry.
But again, this to me, this harkens back to Quarles in, you know, season three. When he, you know, his fun job that he liked to do, picking up, you know, guys and then right. doing all kinds of nuts, crazy yes. things and violent things with him. And I never thought Sammy was into the same kind of thing, but right. sure, why not?
Well, like, think about what he looked like tonight and the times that we've seen him before. He looked out of it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if he was strung out on drugs or mm-hmm. he just hadn't slept because of the price on his head from the Canadians. Who right. knows? But I don't think he was getting enjoyment out of it. I think he just had a mental lapse. He lost touch with reality. It's like, mm-hmm. this is just what has to happen.
It was odd for me because there was never a setup for him to have this streak in him, and he seemed really disappointed that he wasn't back there.
Yeah.
It seemed like
yeah.
he really wanted to get...
I was supposed
and,
to...
Yeah, and every yeah. other time we've seen him, he's been kind of like this, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm depending on my dad.
Yes,
you know, this
very
sort of
true.
Really, so it was... It was almost like there was a few episodes we didn't get to see of yeah. this transition of him
well,
going
that,
from like
and,
a puppet to
and so,
yeah.
And so I'm asking the question here: do you think they did that just to make the scene weirder?
And, well, what about those blow-up dolls?
Yeah, the blow-up dolls,
weird.
The chainsaw, the guy screaming. Yeah,
they hand them the gasoline and go, "How long until you run out of steps?"
Yeah.
What? Okay, gasoline. Well, are you going to torch? Oh, no, of course it's for the chainsaw.
Course,
the whole
yeah.
thing was weird. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. sure.
And
why not?
And I'm wondering if they went, like in the writer's room, if they went, mannequins. Mannequins. We'll get some mannequins.
Mannequins and blow-up
dolls. Yeah. Yeah. It's last week. We don't have to explain it. It's just weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, my favorite thing is like the first guy says that was last week, and then Picker comes out. He's like, that was last week. And to me, that's like a classic Elmore Leonard device where right. it's just like you take something very idiosyncratic and then you play it a few more times yeah. the exact same way as if it's completely normal.
But it was extremely effective because, I mean, that whole Detroit sequence was just bizarre.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
And yet dropping the little humor bit and then the surprise ending for Sammy.
Yeah.
And
wow.
I don't know if you've ever had to do it, but if you
chainsaw somebody,
kill somebody, shoot a guy. Yeah.
No, if you've had to stand on the other side of a squib hit, where mm-hmm. you know you're going to get that splatter.
Oh my god!
It's not like great ones, like indie ones.
I don't know how
ones.
You're not standing there going.
Yeah, because you know? Yeah, he takes it in the face.
It's
both
a wide splatter, and they
twice.
Both.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. true.
Man, so again, I loved it. Loved
yeah.
it. Loved the
yeah.
splatter.
Yeah, Boyd was covered in blood the entire episode.
That's true. Yeah. He was.
The cafe.
But
with
here's
the
my
shirt.
Question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Is this legitimately the end of the Detroit crime family? Like, is there are no Tonins left, I assume.
Right. And the Canucks have taken over, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, Wynn Duffy, Jerry Burns, now a series regular.
Right.
So I have to assume that he and Boyd are now, you know, firmly shacked up in their efforts.
Well, I think they made it very clear the Canucks are not, they're not going to do any bit because the organized crime by definition should be organized.
Yeah.
This is their last shipment and you need to look to Mexico. So I think it is. I think we're done with Detroit.
Wow. So it's all Canadian now.
And I'm wondering if that
it's
had
all
ever,
Mexican now.
Mexican.
And I
yeah.
wonder if that is
they're taking everybody's job.
Yeah. I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that, they wanted to do this Detroit storyline, but Elmore passed away. And if they decided, well, we don't want to do it now.
I don't know. That's a good point, though.
So. Too bad because it's a fun place to hang out.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like we're going to be there at all anymore. I mean, because what who would be going back to see Sammy's
the
dead.
Whole structure
just,
is
gone.
I mean, Picker's going with them.
Yeah,
right.
So he's
and his contacts are in Mexico.
Right.
So it looks like Mexico's the next thing.
And I
right.
guess if you think about how many lieutenants went to Kentucky and died, there can't have been that much structure left when Sammy took over. It's not even necessarily all
true.
Sammy's fault. Everyone was dead.
That's true. That's the one bad thing about a body count.
Yeah,
you got to figure out new places and new
true.
Crime families.
You got to get the gut body count up.
Yeah, exactly.
You
start recruiting.
Everybody.
Can't go there anymore.
Yep. Yeah,
it's a war of attrition.
I never thought I would see Dave Koechner shoot someone.
Yeah.
That was just strange for me. I mean, I love that this show did a lot of casting against type.
Yeah, Dave Foley as one of the Canadians.
And Will Sasso as well from Mad TV.
Mm-hmm.
They had an extensive guest cast list tonight. Mm-hmm.
They did. And I love seeing Dave Foley again. Mm-hmm. I've always liked watching him. And you were mentioning about... The
What show? Damages?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how often they use comedians in that show.
In dramatic roles.
I thought Foley was great. It was because you're so used to seeing him being on, you know, Kids in the Hall and being big.
Comedic roles.
To just sit
and
back.
Wearing women's clothes and wigs.
Right. But to just sit back and be, you know, smaller, more
okay,
subtle.
But am I the only one that at the end of that, when he has that look back at everybody, because I kind of chuckled at it. I was okay, that's not very intimidating. Maybe for a Canadian, that's intimidating.
Well, but, I mean, if you've ever watched Canadian drama, yeah. That is huge.
That would melt ice. And in Canada, that's very
that's
useful.
That's saying something.
Yeah, exactly. York,
very
right
important.
Now.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it was good to see Will Sasso. But let's get back to the Koechner thing, because we're now going back to Florida. And, of course, that's where Raylan gets his babysitter, or I'm sorry, his chauffeur, whatever he's called.
Chaperone,
yeah. And it's Koechner, of course. And it's great to see him, and it's wonderful to see him in a more dramatic turn as well. Mm-hmm. He's one of the great guys. He's extremely nice. He does he just likes to work, but does a lot of favors and small things, mm-hmm. but he's always working because mm-hmm. everybody likes to work with him.
And he's the guy who can slip into roles and you don't go, you know, mm-hmm. oh, I don't buy that guy. Yeah. You know, he can just really slip in.
And what a remarkably different Marshall than Raylan.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking of.
You know, if you look at them, their priorities are just completely opposite, mm-hmm. where he's the guy who family always came first. Yep. You know, he being a Marshall is his job. It's not his life, versus Raylan, who would rather go back and catch mm-hmm. the Haitian mm-hmm. for poaching gators than go see his daughter.
Yes.
And the way they costumed him. And, you know, you see Raylan in his jeans and his whatever this shirt was. Was it
looking
just
on,
his
looking
really shirt.
But he's
really
in the
good.
Boots and the hat and everything like that. Then you go to this guy and he looks like an accountant or whatever. He does not look like a Marshall in any way, shape, or form. Right. And I thought that part was great. And then you were mentioning that it's kind of the father-son parallel again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
giving him the advice. And go ahead.
It's one of the themes of the show, you know, going back is several seasons with Arlo and then with Boyd's relationship with Arlo, mm-hmm. Boyd's relationship with Bo.
Yeah. Art's relationship with Raylan.
Yeah. Is, you know, fatherhood is a big deal. So now that Raylan's a father, he's avoiding it. I think a lot of that has to do with unresolved feelings with, you know, his own father. Mm-hmm. He's not ready. He doesn't want to be the person who screws up his kid. Mm-hmm. But as Dave Koechner's character Sutter points out, you know, it's Art who says it's important to see him while they're young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Mm-hmm. But he says it offhandedly, but he doesn't see him. And then, so then we're left with that scene where he's with Winona at the end and they're doing it all via Skype, whatever the heck they're doing it, FaceTime, whatever. But so what is your opinion about why he chooses not to? Is it because,
Sutter had a line about, you know, it was the hardest thing was leaving on Sunday.
Yeah.
You
haven't
seen their faces. Mm-hmm. And they ended the scene on that line.
Right.
And I thought that was part of the reason why he went back. Because he didn't want to have to go through that. He wasn't ready to go through that. And he's still conflicted. I think he still can't be a dad because to be a dad, I got to give this up. And yet he just worked with a guy mm-hmm. that has both.
That has both.
But I think he also sees a sacrifice this guy's had to make in order to keep all of it together. So
I think the underlying thing, which I don't think he's aware of now, is that he's afraid of screwing it up because he's got no role model to be a father.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how.
Well, I think also he's still in love with Winona, and that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that extra element of, you know, how do I go see her and be with my baby and have this unrequited love and not, you know, not have that part of what I want. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know.
It was so much easier not to go.
Yeah. Just avoid it.
Yeah.
Avoid all of it.
And that's why you have Skype anyway.
Exactly.
That's what it's for.
What
I liked about it is it showed a weakness that hopefully that they can exploit, meaning he can learn something from that and grow from that or something like that, because it was too easy and he was weak and he should have gone and seen his kid.
Yeah.
Do we know if Sutter's going to be coming back? Is that going to be a sort of...
Well, I don't think we're going to go... We're not going to be in Florida either.
Well, here's the thing, though. Winona's down there. Yeah. So I don't know. I doubt that we would go the whole season without him mm-hmm. seeing his kid once.
Yeah, I think that's got to happen. That's why they set it up. He's got to have... I mean, I think there's some resolution there.
Because the weird thing about Florida is, first of all, sugar is the new drug.
Yeah.
Hey, interesting.
Yeah. hey, it never left.
That's right, man. It's more addictive.
Sorry, man. I'm into corn syrup, man.
Yeah.
You on that new
I'm in high fructose.
Huh?
So that is going to be happening, mm-hmm. and that obviously is going to be handled down Florida way.
Well, but wait a minute. I don't know that it is, because the whole reason why Daryl's leaving Florida is because they got nothing there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He says it. He says there's nothing here for us.
You gotta, and
the Haitian says you got to find something else and make it yours.
Yep.
And that's why they're going to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's sugar. And Natalie Z's still on the following. Isn't she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tammy, way to be pragmatic. Thank you very much.
That's true.
Your suspension of disbelief just shattered.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, she. I mean, that's why she left. She was always going to be a guest star from here on out. I don't know. You either go the whole season without him seeing his kid, which could in itself be its own thing narratively, and these writers know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Or maybe in the last couple of episodes, he chases Daryl back down to Florida. Mm-hmm. Or knows what.
But clearly they're coming up to Kentucky.
Well, yeah. I mean, I see Daryl being very comfortable in Harlan County.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
seems
very
more his speed, less sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and or sweaty probably, in a different way,
and probably more English-speaking people.
Then I really don't know how they're going to keep it alive.
So, I think Skype
because Skype. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, I'm sure they can easily find reasons to go to Florida. They just did today.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, they used Sutter to lay in a lot of family,
right?
A lot of family.
They hammered it.
Yeah, so. Okay.
So is that the theme for this season?
I don't think it's going to be the theme for the season, not based on coming attractions.
Well, I mean, we've got a crime family moving in. Boyd trying to build his family.
Well, it's got to be the extension.
Crime family.
Well, but look at it. I mean, because Raylan has no family at the moment. Arlo's dead. So the only family he has is the child, because he's not going to have... Well, yeah, I mean actual blood relatives, family and stuff like that. So in order to keep any of that alive, it'll have to stay. Sure, it's going to be part of his motivation anyway, because he's always going to have a child.
Mm.
And it's always going to be a thing.
You know, I've always been an advocate for putting Winona or the baby in jeopardy, you know, because it's
always
have been just from a dramatic standpoint, because it creates great motivation character and actor names in Raylan, you know, great motivation that would keep him because we kind of got there when she was pregnant.
Right. Yeah.
And we were going through that, you know, she was in jeopardy as that was happening. And, you know, and I predicted that the baby was never going to be born, that everybody was going to die. It was going to be an ugly bloodbath, which thankfully didn't happen. What makes you say that? So that's another way that, you know, potentially Winona could get killed and then he ends up being responsible for this baby, which I don't see how that's going to come together because she has a sister, I think, who was protecting her.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's another possibility for how the Winona and child thing could go, because it's great conflict and great motivation for him and still deals with the threat of family. Mm-hmm.
Just such a good storyline to not do something with.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think they have to. Right. I think they have to.
And in the larger context, I think you're going to have Boyd obviously come back. And then you'll have, with Daryl in town, those things could be at odds because you have those families, because Daryl's obviously going to want to be dealing drugs or something, which is going to be against Boyd. So we can still have all that fun stuff between families.
Right.
And Raylan said that line about the money specifically so the Haitian would hear him. So I don't think that was an accident at all. I think he knew that it would get back to...
To Daryl.
To Daryl.
He wants his shot to put him back in jail.
Yeah. I think Raylan wants Daryl up.
And there was that scene on the bridge at the end of it when, you know, Daryl says that whole story about his father and what his father wanted to take care of the family.
On
like
his
crap.
Deathbed. Mm-hmm.
And Raylan knows it's a lie and lets him
Calls
know he
him
knows
on
it's
it.
A lie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Raylan knows something's up. So you guys would predict that he wants to put Daryl back.
I think, you know... He said it earlier in the episode. He's like, man, like I thought all the crows would be dead or in jail by now.
Yeah.
I think he's looking for an excuse. Mm-hmm. He was ready to put him back in prison if he didn't help them out.
At one point, I think he had one crow left. you know? I think that was it. And now they're, like, coming out of everywhere.
It's a murder of crows.
Damn it. I thought I got rid of all these crows.
And look at it.
It's an infestation.
It's as if he planted corn.
Except you planted crows. It's the worst crop. It's a dumb crop.
Hey, did you know he got shot in the ear?
Oh, that's right. Boy got shot in the ear.
He got disfigured.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because the actor, Daryl,
he has a wonky ear.
And they did that shot where every time they cut to him, like, oh, that's a wonky ear. That's like, boy, they both have wonky ears now.
They're going to be
same ear, too.
Ear cousins.
Being parallel, it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Damn it, Donnie. You know, you could have been alive right now, but instead you have to blast a hole in a door like an idiot, okay? Taking off people's ears. He has zero regard for other people.
Right.
That must be a brutal... I mean, it must be a great call to get. You're going to go on
Justified.
It must be like... three pages.
Well, just because Graham...
No, he didn't even get 3 pages. He's not
I'm thinking about the guy on the bridge.
Well,
you know.
Graham Yost had said at the premiere that so many people call to be on the show merely to get killed. They want to... Can I be with the next...
Can I be one of the guys
killed?
That gets killed?
And I think that's what happened last season with Gerald McCraney. I think he wanted to come on.
Right.
Just to get... Yeah, my foot gets chopped. Yes, I'm in. But he get more than anything else. People want to come on Justified to get killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. I miss him.
Good
he was so good on the show.
There you go. So
good show for it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Indeed.
Well, let's see. What else do... I wanted to talk the Paxton and the Clover Hill.
Yes.
Yes.
Because obviously Boyd learns what judge is going to be there, and it's the one judge that is the wild card.
Can't really get to.
And he was just going to threaten his family, but he has no family.
Has no vices.
Again,
okay, damn it.
I'm sorry, but I had a question about that. Mm-hmm. Because that was a judge he was talking about in jail.
With Ava.
With Ava.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he says to her, I'll threaten her.
His family. And then he finds out he doesn't have a family.
But that's not what I think the call was. I think...
No?
I think what it was is... He lied to her flat out when he said he'd threaten his family. He got the call that he was indeed the judge who was going to be on the trial. And he's like, well, I'm out of options.
Because he walks out of that room and his lieutenant, whoever was in there, turns and does the fill-in line, which is the judge has no family. So at that point, I'm thinking, well, then he was either lying to Ava.
Wait, I don't understand what you guys are talking about at all.
So when Boyd tells Ava at the top of the episode,
I'll threaten his family,
that was a lie. He knew that judge had no family, but he was doing what he could to keep Ava's spirits up.
So you think he knew that he didn't have a family?
Yeah, because Billy so very quickly, either he read the situation super well, which I don't know if Billy's that smart.
Right.
Well, he's smarter than the other guy.
That's true.
Right. But it stopped me just for a second because I was trying to think, why would Boyd lie to Ava about that, you know, when there could have been anything else.
I feel like he just wants to keep her hopes
up.
She was not built for prison.
But it was such a specific line, you know, as opposed to like, I'll do whatever it takes, or, you know, it was like, I'll threaten his family. And then he must have known, because there's no way Billy would have known if.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought it was just kind of odd. Mm-hmm. That's all. But it did get him over to Paxton.
Yeah, yeah. And
how
many times does Boyd have to, like, I'm not at the top. Damn it. And of all the people in Kentucky, you want to get pissed off?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does this guy not know who Boyd is?
Yeah, I was going, wait a minute. You're at home. You already know who this guy is. And do you really think this guy isn't going to come at you?
Yeah.
I don't know what that was about.
Is that just arrogance?
I think it is arrogance.
Probably.
Yeah, because, well, his whole agenda last season was to show Boyd who's boss.
That's right.
So he finally feels like he has that moment, and he's not going to let go of it. Also, I feel like once you reach that kind of power...
You think you're untouchable?
Yeah, to a certain degree. He was left alive at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. Boyd could have killed him then, but he didn't, you know?
But that's kind of my point, is that he Boyd could have killed him, but he didn't. I would think that he'd be smarter than to just, like, rub it in.
Taunt him.
Exactly, because he's just like, he could have killed me, but he didn't, as opposed to, you know, doing the whole bag and, you know, screw you and all that kind of stuff. You know, kind of just, like, let it go and stay alive.
Well,
because you know the guy's capable of killing.
When he was starting to go off, I'm like, going, well, how do you think this is going to end?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. He seemed smarter than that. He seemed a little smarter than that. I'm glad he did it because it was fun to watch. But I was like, well, you see, I thought you were a little smarter than that.
And then you caught something at the end.
Yeah. So Paxton's wife, who is
Mara.
Yeah, Mara, who's set up to be this Latvian import, mm-hmm. a doctor in Latvia. All of a sudden, when Boyd leaves, I may be mishearing, but I could have sworn her accent completely dropped, mm-hmm. and she wasn't a foreigner anymore. And even Boyd sensed that there was something wrong, mm-hmm. that she is not who she appears to be.
Right.
And I'm wondering how much of a player she's going to be this season. Mm-hmm. I doubt we've seen the last of her.
Mm. Well, and is Paxton dead?
Well, I don't know why she would say that if he's dead.
And why would Boyd? I mean, Boyd would probably know whether he left him dead or not. He's done it a couple of times.
Right. Yeah.
So then she goes over and says, don't worry, I'll take care of you. So maybe he's a vegetable. And
maybe.
She's just going to, like, change the tune.
I don't know. He beats him, you know, to basically to death with the butt of his handgun. And then she comes in. She says, you killed him. And then he says, is that your expert doctor opinion?
Right. Which is a bit of a challenge, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she...
To her and who she says she is.
Maybe that's the degree of dead you need to be in Latvia to actually get buried.
Yeah. Until all of the teeth have been stolen from your mouth, you're not dead.
No.
Yeah.
I buried guys less dead than him.
Yes, exactly. Ring the bell. Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding, ding. All right. So I don't know. I didn't hear it as much as that, but, you know.
The accent drop?
Yeah, and I believe the actress is English is not her first language. I'm not positive, but I think so. But anyway, who knows? I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Well, we know that you never trust anyone whose English is their second language.
That's right. That's, according to Daryl. Mm-hmm. That's you know,
Daryl's rule.
The Tao of Daryl.
Yeah. Oh, we got to meet Wendy. Wendy's coming back.
Right.
The sister.
I think it's Winnie.
Winnie?
Wendy.
It was Wendy? Wendy. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
She
Alicia Witt.
Again, it was a life imitating art, briefly.
With
our accident here. Anyway, I thought it was great. She gets in an accident to get out.
Clever little ploy.
Mm-hmm. And
she's a crow.
Yeah,
she's
through
a crow,
and through.
And she's got to be coming back. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, well, we'll save it for predictions. But
I can already tell what you're thinking. Everyone thinks that anytime there's an attractive female guest star
really
on Justified.
And they make a point that we all saw the tramp stamp.
The tramp stamp, yeah.
Yeah. It really is the Star Trek thing, isn't it, with Shatner?
It's the Shatner effect. You have a charismatic leading male. Anyone who enters their orbit, you assume eventually. Yeah.
They'll be docking somewhere. Yeah.
But she's like, she's too smart and too useful of a crow to completely disappear. You know, she's the only one trying to make it legit.
Because everybody needs a secretary.
Yeah.
Who can pretend like she's a lawyer.
Yeah. But can do it reasonably well.
I know.
They signed a memo.
They did sign a memo. Mm-hmm. She got a deal done.
Yeah. Very resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Koechner is one of those actors that no matter what he's doing, you just watch him.
Yeah.
You just, because I was thinking Memo is the thing of the cafe. And even when he sits behind Daryl, your focus is still like, what's he doing? Okay, he's just sitting there. Oh, yeah.
If you've never seen him perform live, it's incredible. He's the most amazing improviser I've ever seen.
He is. He's very good.
Yeah.
Extremely. Yeah. And Matt would know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But I don't understand. He was a guest star and he didn't die. Which. I got to tell you, when they're sitting in that car and he's talking about his family and stuff, I'm going,
don't talk about your family! Don't talk about your family!
Dude, there's going to be a headshot somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think that's when we come back to Florida, mm-hmm. that may happen. And that may be the thing to get Raylan to listen and pay attention.
Saving Raylan's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saving make him realize
Raylan.
That it's so tenuous and you're only here for so long. I mean, if you have family, you should, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of it now.
Check them out.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. At least
see
go
what's
visit.
Up.
Go visit. You know.
Go visit the fam.
What else we got? Anything else you guys
I don't
want
got
to talk
nothing.
About?
I think I'm
okay.
It was I'll just say the pacing was great. Mm-hmm. It felt like, you know, they're back. They got their mystery episode done, the mystery season.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're back into the previous one with quarrels and crazy and that hopefully keeps up.
Well, I like that they're going to bring. I like that they're bringing the crows back to the county, to Harlan,
to the holler,
to Holler. That'll be fun.
Well, the ones they don't kill.
Well, that's true. Yeah. It'll be set in Murder of Crows. But also that the comedy was great. You know, because we had a lot of fun in this, a lot of fun lines. You know, I'm not going to tell Desi Arnaz.
Yeah.
You and eyebrows over here.
Mr. Eyebrows.
A lot of Elmore Leonard stuff.
Yep.
That was a lot of fun.
Yep. Great.
So. Elvis did not make it to Cuba.
Yeah. You laughed at a few. I can't remember what they were.
I laugh at everything on this show. So. It's so entertaining, top to bottom. Everything's great.
We saw it with, normally you're watching the show, you've got one or maybe one other person with you in the room, and we had, you know,
it was
500
full,
people watching it with us.
Yeah.
And boy, the laughter was.
Yeah. And,
but, you know, it was great because these people understand you can laugh, but you got to stop real quick because you need to hear the next line.
It's a very good, very vocal laugh, but it's a quick one because you don't want to miss the next line.
Yeah.
Well trained.
Yeah,
indeed.
They know they're.
Indeed.
Yeah, they do. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's a good lead into it. Let's talk about that. So we're going to move on to our special segment here and talk about the premiere that was there Monday night at the DGA here in Hollywood, Directors Guild of America. We were invited by FX, and I guess everybody over at Sony is their partner and stuff for this particular episode. I think it was Paramount. Whatever. Sorry, guys. Thanks for the invite, though.
Nice work. Just walking
Sony produces the show.
Yeah. All right. So,
Sega. It was Sega.
Yeah, thank you. So they invited us, and we were happy to be there. We were grateful for the invite, and it was great. And we went just as guests. We didn't have to cover, though one of our colleagues was covering the press line, so that they got to do that part.
Yeah. And we just got to stand and watch and sneak photos over people's shoulders.
And, you know,
it was fun. Right. So we have some pictures here. Yeah, there's Ava Carter, Joelle Carter. Yeah. She looked very beautiful.
She does.
All the women looked amazing.
Oh, they were bedecked in their finery.
They were. She had.
Sorry, they were what?
No? Bedecked.
Bedecked?
Her dress. I wish I could have gotten a shot of her dress. It had spangles all over it.
Well, his shirt is great.
Yeah, I know. You know, like I said, I was stealing photos over people's shoulders.
Yeah.
His shoulder.
Yeah.
And then that there's Graham Yost.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we also have David
Meunier,
our friend.
Even though he's
Johnny C.
That's right, Johnny C. was there.
It was
good to
awesome
see him
when
again.
He was in the studio.
Yeah, he came
great.
To visit us.
Friend of the show, he'd come to visit.
He had that
before.
Sad. I'm
There's
a dead
Jacob Pitts is Tim
look.
Gunderson. Mm-hmm.
Tim Gunderson.
Oh,
he was really like enjoying being on the press line. He was talking to a lot of people and really hanging out.
Interesting.
Neither was
Erica. Was Rachel?
Rachel.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
There's Natalie.
There's Natalie Z. Again, another
lots
gorgeous dress. She had an amazing pair of shoes. I made a
That's
collage.
Not an amazing pair of shoes.
I made a collage of a lot of the pictures that we took.
Wow.
And one of them, and it's on my Twitter account if anybody wants to see it, but one of them was a picture of her shoes. Because you pointed them out.
Well, because you liked it. Get a shot of the shoes.
I did.
Shoes.
So, and there we
go.
The man!
Walton.
Walton Goggins.
Has there ever been a face as smooth as that face right now?
It's so funny, though, when he came on, we were looking for him and stuff. And then all I saw, because he was walking behind people, I just saw the hair.
It
was in rare form.
He was peacocking.
He was.
Full product gone, and it was great. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was good to see him.
And there's Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
Looking good. And
there, we had Erica in there somewhere. I don't know where the heck she is, but there's a
there.
Line.
So there's a whole press line there. Lots of people very excited. And, lots and lots of people attending.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun. And we weren't the only ones sneaking photos across the line.
Everybody was.
So we had a good time. So Graham Yost did a little talk before
the episode aired,
and he talked a lot about Elmore Leonard,
of course,
and the fact that he so Elmore's son, whose name escapes me, called Graham Yost and said, "Dad had a stroke," and this was in August, and then 2 weeks later, Elmore passed away. And so Graham Yost and Timothy Oliphant and his wife and apparently other people from the show went to the funeral. And so Graham Yost talked about that, and he said that he went to, if you'll remember, help me out with the story, he went to, he saw Elmore Leonard's desk.
Right.
And in the house, and he had been writing up until kind of the moment he had the stroke. And so, which is just a neat tribute to, he's obviously a writer through and through, was still working.
And he was writing a Raylan.
Yeah, he was working on, I don't know if it was his last released book, but it was called Raylan, and it was a collection of short stories.
Yeah, and it was, a lot of, he loved the show, and he had said that Timothy Oliphant gave the greatest portrayal of any one of his characters.
Yeah.
Bar none. Yeah. So it was a huge tribute to Timothy, which is great. He said he had a hard time getting used to the hat. Apparently, Elmore was not a fan of the hat, but he got used to it, so yeah. That was good. Mm-hmm. And there are other characters that are in the TV show that are never in any of his writings, but he liked what they did so much with them that now he included characters from the show in his writing.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, so that was good.
And he talked about Nick Searcy.
Yeah, he felt...
Who was at the premiere as well.
Nick, everybody was there. Nick Searcy was great. Nick Searcy's portrayal was so indelible that when he was writing, Elmore Leonard, Grammio said that he saw what he was writing, and it was the Raylan story, and he had written in the prose, he was talking about art, but he didn't write art's name. He wrote Nick Searcy and had to cross it out because that's how he thought they were so interchangeable.
Yeah.
That he and Graham thought that was just a wonderful thing to see and really said how much he appreciated what Nick did with that character. Mm. So I thought that was great.
Graham Yost, while he was talking, his voice broke a few times while he was talking about Elmore Leonard, and so that was really touching.
Oh, he talked with such affection and admiration for this man, and not just for the work, but for the man and what it meant to work with him and to know him and to get to know him and be a friend and all that kind of stuff. It was really touching.
Eulogy at Elmore Leonard's funeral was given by his son.
Yeah.
And his son said, one of the things my father is known for is the 10 rules of writing. Mm-hmm. And he said he could have written the 10 rules of fatherhood.
So, mm-hmm. There you go. So, which is great. Maybe that's why the storyline in here that is prevalent
is
about fathers and sons and parenting. So.
And then the other story that that he told was that when he was in the service, Elmore Leonard was out with – he was young. He was underage.
He was 20.
When he was in the service and went out with a bunch of the guys one night and had a dollar left, and they went to a tattoo parlor. And Elmore Leonard went to...
That's what you do.
Yeah,
went to the tattoo parlor with his dollar, and he said, "What can I get for this?" And the guy said, "I can either give you your service number or your nickname." And so Elmore Leonard said, "Well, I'm going to take the nickname, and my nickname is Dutch." And so he got a tattoo, and... Today, he has 13 grandkids, and 6 of them
are named Dutch.
They have
a tattoo of Dutch. We assume that the other 7 are too young to get a tattoo.
Yeah, exactly.
But that is a tribute to him as a grandfather.
It would be funny, though, if they had 6 grandkids named Dutch. Which Dutch are you?
Yeah, exactly. It's like George Foreman. But the other story they had is that Graham talks about is that one of his grandkids, he said when he was visiting once.
Oh, he was 92 or something like that at the time.
I don't know how old he was. But something like that. One of the grandkids was sitting on the end of the diving board blocking Elmore from because Elmore
access.
Wanted to go up there and do a backflip, and the grand said, "No, you're gonna hurt yourself.
Yeah. You're gonna kill yourself. I'm not gonna let you." And so he camped out on the diving board so that Elmore could not do his backflip.
But great stories and wonderful to hear all that. And you could and everybody in there. I mean, there people were pulling out the hankies when Graham was talking about the whole thing. So it was great to see.
Yeah,
he went out at the top of his game.
Boy, no kidding, huh?
Was he ever? Did he ever have?
No,
did he have a bad game?
Of the game?
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, like, God,
it's just nice to go out on something.
Yeah,
good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
So
that is our special.
So that's our special segment.
Right.
Go ahead.
No.
You had questions? All right.
No. Steve Bottomley has a question.
No. All right. Well, if no questions, we can move on to predictions because we're running
out of predictions. Okay, getting a seizure.
I kind of revealed mine.
Well, I'll say it again.
I'm just going to say that I think there's going to be Jeopardy because I keep willing it. I think there's going to be Jeopardy for Winona.
And the baby.
By the
way, I didn't get the name. Did they say the name of the daughter?
Mm-mm. Your daughter, your girl.
That was very strange. And he said, "Goodnight, ladies." And I was like, why? They aren't naming her.
Her name's Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Dutch Givens. All
right. Dutch Givens. Now that's a name.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He and Wendy do something.
So that was your prediction.
I think it makes Ava just jealous enough that she goes after. I'm just pulling stuff out.
It's like, where are you going?
Yeah, like how deep up there are you?
I don't see that. Whatever that was, I don't see it.
It's been a year.
Well, I mean, we get to see in the preview that Amy Smart is a guest star this season.
Mm-hmm. Love interest?
Yeah, love interest.
Or lust interest, whatever you want to say.
And Raylan's living in this criminal's house. I don't know whose house.
Fancy mansion,
it has to do with anything. Mm-hmm. Potentially up on Clover Hill.
Yeah,
I
was thinking.
I think I think that the crows are going to start screwing with Boyd's new Mexico venture, and it's going to leave a lot of bodies, and Raylan's going to have to step in as always. Mm-hmm. I hope that we don't lose the mystery element of last season. I liked the change up in the storytelling, and I hope that, you know, this is just a further evolution of the show and not a regression to what it was before. As much as I've always loved the series and every season is its own beautiful animal, I loved how surprised I was with last year and getting this big reveal of Drew Thompson, and hoping that we get something, you know, just as epic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and going off of that, I think it's going to be a hybrid. I'm hoping anyway that'll be a hybrid, meaning they'll have the mystery of what Raylan will have to unravel is how these forces and how are they coming together and where is it all happening. I think because we aren't going to know. I'm hoping they're not going to tell us everything up front. We'll learn it as Raylan learns it. Is the crows coming in and how they're going to interfere with Boyd and all that other stuff. Hopefully that's what we'll have to, rather than a specific mystery about.
You know, if they do introduce like a Mexican thing and going down to Mexico, I will be interested to see just how accurate and just how intense they make the cartels. Because right now, the cartels are pretty nasty. They got nothing on Detroit. So it'll be interesting to see if they, as writers, if they go, do we utilize this or do we pull back a little bit? I mean, you know,
they don't really seem to be afraid of the squibs.
Yeah.
But I think Raylan will end up in El Paso with the border.
That ain't squibs. They're afraid of, I get you, Steve.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have any jurisdiction in Mexico.
Which maybe that could be interesting.
No one does, evidently.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyway. It'll be interesting to see.
I hope that we have a return of Constable Bob Sweeney.
I did hear someone, as we were
walking away from the sign-in table, someone talking about Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, I was surprised he wasn't there.
Yeah, me too. And I think he was doing something. Yeah. So, but hopefully
Amy Smart was there last
Monday night. That red dress on, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And Erica Tazel. Tazel had an incredible red dress on, too.
Yeah. She looked great.
Woo.
Hello.
Yeah.
All right. Last thoughts.
So glad it's back.
Yeah.
No, okay. Nothing else. Okay. Tell them where they can find you.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. And I'm everywhere here at AfterBuzz TV. I'm doing like nine shows.
But where they can see you perform?
Oh, they can also see me perform live at the iOS Theater in Hollywood, 6366 Hollywood Boulevard. And if you're in the Chicago area, I will be performing this weekend at Chicago Sketchfest as a member of DJ Fawcett at Stage 773. So please come out for that Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m.
There you go. Thank you, Matt.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Steve, follow
that. Bottomly Steve at Twitter.
No, it's Bottomly Steven.
Yes, that too. And if you happen to be in Portland, I'm going to be probably in a bar up there somewhere, and you can buy me a drink. I'll perform for you there. I'll do a joke.
Okay.
I have a super fun new video on my website, TamaraCentral.com, TamaraCentral.com. Also, I'm
super
on Twitter
fun.
At Tamara Berg.
Yeah, you can only find super me here. Fun. So that's it. All right, everybody, thank you very much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.
Thank you for watching AfterBuzz TV on YouTube. For more of your favorite after shows and interviews, subscribe to our channel here. And be sure to share your opinion on the episode in the comment section below here. We'd love to see what you guys are buzzing about. Thanks again. Buzz you later.